We are talking today with Doug Fine. Doug Fine is an investigative journalist. As a young freelancer, he reported for The Washington Post, Salon, U.S. News and World Report, Sierra, Wired, Outside, National Public Radio, and other venues from little visited jungle war zones like Burma, Rwanda, Laos, Guatemala, and Tajikistan. He is the author of three books, Not Really an Alaskan Mountain Man, Farewell My Subaru, and he is here to talk about his third and latest book, Too High to Fail, Cannabis and the New Green Economic Revolution. Doug, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Mike, and always a joy to be in Seattle.
So start out, tell us, what was your motivation in writing Too High to Fail?
Like 80% of Americans, I knew that the drug war was an utter failure. Candidate Barack Obama had no problem winning the presidency on that exact platform. When it came to the war on drugs during his first campaign, he said, it's an utter failure. Sometimes I think he used the word miserable, and he said cannabis needs to be decriminalized. So everybody knows this, and I'm just by nature and as a journalist not someone who wants to whine about a problem. I want to look towards a solution. So I was wondering, I started to look around to see if there was an in-place, Portugal was decriminalizing, a place that I could study in the field and report on really what was going on. It was still only in kind of my handful of books, ideas to follow up with Farewell My Subaru, in which I gave up petroleum, still live on my solar-powered goat ranch along the border in New Mexico, where one day, instead of the hummingbird wings in the feeder outside my bedroom window waking me up, it turns out I am awakened by the final scene out of the movie Goodfellas. Helicopters, airplanes, this being the Patriot Act era, I thought that maybe I was in trouble for some petition I had signed against fracking, but it turned out it was my AARP member neighbor spending a few million of our taxpayer dollars in a pot of money called something like the Interagency Border Narcotics Interdiction Task Force, supposed to be going after criminal cartels, going after my senior citizen neighbor for under a dozen plants with which he was self-medicating for PTSD-type stuff, PTSD issues, all of which, by the way, starting a year later and to this day, would be completely legal in New Mexico because we in New Mexico have since revved up our medical cannabis program, which was not yet in place. So instead of coyotes and deer in my creek bed this morning, there were 60 guys with automatic weapons and earpieces. And forget about the waste of money. My neighbor didn't spend a day, a second in jail. His lawyer was waiting for him at the processing center, et cetera, et cetera. Not that he should have. But my family was put at risk. The drug war brought automatic weapons into my creek bed. Even this didn't convince me that this was the next book I'm going to write. It wasn't until it was revealed sometime later that the mayor of nearby Columbus, New Mexico, a U.S. town sleepy since Pancho Villa invaded in 1916, was in fact a card-carrying member of the La Familia cartel, since deposed by the Zetas. But his job, I don't know why he thought it was so easy to get a lot of weapons in the U.S., his job was to smuggle U.S. weapons down to Mexico, facilitate the war that's killed 50,000 Mexicans in the last few years just over cannabis. So the Interagency Border Narcotics Interdiction Task Force wasn't going after the real cartel member. He was going after my AARP member, minding his own business, self-medicating. My neighbor's real crime, not taking the pharmaceuticals that were recommended for him for the PTSD. So long answer to this question, but that's why I decided to write about drug policy. And what I found was a U.S.-based unilateral declaration of drug peace for a sustainable outdoor farmer-supporting model, a locavore model of cannabis, which is America's number one crop, in Mendocino County, California. And I wrote about one season in the book, Too High to Fail.
And did you move there?
I did. Relocated with my family on Valentine's Day of 2011. And this is something for listeners to know about outdoor cannabis cultivation. I think for those who are among America's 100 million cannabis aficionados, and that includes our last three presidents, of course, we might be Whole Food shoppers. We might be, better yet, farmers market frequenters, CSA, community supported agriculture members, best of all, or have our own gardens for our tomatoes and broccoli. But for those of us who have medical necessity for cannabis or use it as a health maintenance tool, social lubricant, spiritual sacrament, whatever it is, don't often think about that, the farm to market model. And so that's what I wrote about, especially when it comes to outdoor cannabis farming. Ladies and gentlemen, support, of course, following all laws, your local cannabis farmer, because outdoor cannabis farmer especially. It takes 10 months. You're at the same risks basically that medieval farmers were, mold and rain, or too early rain before harvest, blah, blah, blah. It could take 10 to 12 weeks for indoor, which is generally a lot more energy intensive to produce and requires a lot more pesticides. Now, it's not a black and white issue, and I'm spending a lot of time researching that, but you folks in Washington, recently your alcohol board made a terrific decision to open up the program that they're developing to outdoor cannabis cultivators. And so my message is, if you're a sustainable person in every other aspect of your life, organic-minded type person, be that way when it comes to legal cannabis here. And also, thanks for your vote last November, Washington.
So tell us, what's the situation in Mendocino?
Okay, so this is a terrific model. I think it's really can be well replicated here and everywhere. Out of economic necessity, the sheriff, a twice-elected registered Republican local boy, decided to acknowledge 80% of the economy. He was forced to. The Board of Supervisors, which is the local government, told him he had to cut 7 deputies, and he hadn't added a deputy, or the department hadn't, since 1972. It was 18% of his force, and he thought that was an unacceptable threat to public safety. So he brought the proposition to the Board of Supervisors and said, allow me to issue zip ties, so this program is called colloquially the zip tie program, for the federal sentencing minimum for conspiracy to blah blah to distribute on the federal level is 100 plants. So we'll show respect to Melinda, the U.S. Attorney for Northern California, Melinda Haig, by only permitting 99 plants, zip tying with these bright yellow bracelets, inspecting them, putting sustainability guidelines, zoning, you know, attractive nuisance reduction, fencing, locks, that kind of thing. And these guys won't get raided by local and state people, and they'll pay $8,000 a year roughly per farmer for the permits, the third-party inspections, and the various costs associated with this program. We'll create jobs, put farmers back to work, and we'll raise the $500,000 in permitting fees that you know, you say I must cut from my budget. And the Board of Supervisors laughed him out of the room. Kendall Smith, one of the supervisors, famously told Sheriff Tom, as he's known locally, that he was living in a pipe dream. And so it didn't raise $500,000. It raised $600,000 with 100 brave farmers that came above ground in a program that was an unmitigated success. I don't even know where to begin. It raised the revenue and saved the jobs. It was going to be replicated all over Northern California, really doing genuine damage to criminal cartels by bringing above-ground farmers into the tax base, mandating sustainability guidelines. All the surrounding counties loved the plan. What else was great about it? The guy who administered the program for Sheriff Tom's name was Randy Johnson, like the famous baseball pitcher. And he had been in law enforcement for 27 years with no experience about cannabis other than arresting people if he saw them have it. And he, besides really having great things to say about the farmers who joined the program, he said that the most important impact of the program, the zip tie program for Mendocino, was not even the deputy job saved, the revenue raised, any of that stuff on the economic side. It was that he has never, in this county of kind of private paranoid climate, he's never had so many, the department has never had so many calls on the things people call police for, home invasion, tree over a power line, God forbid domestic violence, whatever. Because when the plants are permitted by the sheriff's department, you don't have to fear being arrested by the sheriff's department when you're a participant in society. And he said that's why, and he realizes now, why ending the drug war is so important. And the corollary of that is when America's farmers of our number one crop are above ground and taxpaying and sustainable, the cartels go away. It's 50 to 70% of their profits. Cannabis is bulk of the war on drugs all over the world is about cannabis. It's a plant most people love and have for thousands of years. We even have cannabinoid receptors in our body, as many listeners will know, which is why it's such an effective medicine and health maintenance tool. So total unmitigated success in Mendocino County. They were even talking about doing centralized flower trimming facilities in upcoming years that would unify quality control, payroll, be a real nicer issue for security. Right now, during the final days of prohibition, when the plant is harvested and ready to go and people are trimming it for the sort of the look that cannabis customers have become accustomed to during prohibition of trimmed buds, it's a high security risk. There's an entire culture called rippers that goes around and robs people's crops right at this time. And I should say that the principal farmer I followed in the Mendocino County program twice called sheriff's deputies to his farm because rippers were at the gate. And twice they responded in minutes and protected the cannabis farm. So the drug piece works. Fortunately, there's a temporary sad ending. Your spoiler alert for those who are rushing to Amazon or to their indie bookstore right now to buy Too High to Fail. So just for 10 seconds, plug your ears. The feds raided, threatened the Board of Supervisors for their job creating cartel herding, putting farmers back to work, locavore sustainable, organic support of the local crop. If they didn't shut down the program, which they pretty much did, they wound up proving to the black market farmers who were third-generation black market farmers who already felt like they were winning the drug war because they put two kids through college on this plant, convinced them that it was the right thing to do to come above ground by giving the middle finger to the feds when the feds subpoenaed the records of the zip tie program. Just said, nope, and the feds backed down. After a couple of months back and forth, said you can block out all the identification. We just want to see the numbers, the revenue numbers. County's like, sure, you can see some random numbers. And so it was a tremendous victory, and it was a real demonstration to, they have a listing of the Mendocino County, California cannabis farmers. It's called the phone book, by which I mean everyone in that county is a farmer except for, it seemed like, the sheriff and myself when I visited. And so I spoke to a lot of black market farmers, and as the program went on, they were all listening and understanding that this is the time to come above ground. Two other quick points if I can make on why this really matters. Just locally in Mendocino County, and you folks here in Washington can map this onto some of your cannabis cultivation friendly areas. Just in Mendocino, the local crop is worth to this, on paper, one of California's poorest counties, population 80,000, $6 billion wholesale to farmers annually. And that's conservative for one county. All the numbers you hear about cannabis are low. That $6 billion comes from 600,000 plants seized in 2010 by all law enforcement, estimated to be 10% of the crop. Means 6 million plants got to market, and at $1,000 per plant, that's really conservative. That would be about 1 pound per outdoor plant of flowers on very low prices. They've never been as low as $1,000 a pound. That's where you get the $6 billion. The second thing to know is that outdoor cannabis cultivation is something which farmers here in Washington and all over in beautiful areas can market with what Michael Pollan calls supermarket pastoral. It's the story you tell. Farmers say, oh no, if we come above ground, Coors and Marlboro are going to be in the supermarket and the small farmer is going to be stamped out. No, the craft beer market is a $10 billion market every year, and all you have to do is tell that story. Here in the hills of the Cascades, it's just God's sun, you know, and the soil that's been here for generations that my great-grandfather tilled. That is going to sell in the equivalent of a fine wine shop. Also, Napa is a model for tourism, billions every year. Get ready for the bud and breakfast.
Yeah, I could see cannabis being one of the items included in one's CSA basket that arrives on a weekly basis.
Funny that you say that, because one of the farmers I followed in Mendocino, one of the ones who was raided, that's how he started. He was an organic farmer by nature, and he just wanted it to be one item in the basket, and that was his ultimate goal. Incidentally, his name's Matt Cohen. He got raided in October of 2011. He's a prominent spokesperson, not just to me, but to all the media, frontline on PBS, about trying to hurt cartels by being an above-ground tax-paying farmer, grows organically. The sheriff came to his birthday party. He was a Chamber of Commerce member, just the top-tier operator. And our tax dollars went to 6 a.m. one morning in October, 3 days before harvest, with 33 patients in his collective waiting for medicine, including liver cancer patients and others that I visited and spoke with, who said that collective's medicine kept them alive, got them eating again. Raided the DEA agents, 8 or 9 of them raided at dawn in October of 2011. Machine gun point, Matt said he pulled on his boxers running down the stairs, begging them not to shoot his dogs. He'd open the door, don't ram it down, while his wife Courtney shrewdly texted to their employees, don't come in, raid. And they were separated with no contact with their attorneys for 8 or 9 hours while their plants, 99 plants permitted locally, were chainsawed down.
So I'm not clear from the bad news portion that you just gave. So is Mendocino County officially not doing that program anymore, or are they still doing it?
The program, which is technically a land use ordinance 9.31, is still on the books. And farmers who want to make sure that they're cool with the county can still come in, and now, especially now that they know that that the county is going to protect them and their privacy, can still come in and buy zip ties for their plants if they want to be absolutely positive that they won't suffer any local and state raids, because Sheriff Tom mandated that the County of Mendocino Marijuana Eradication Task Force, the COMET folks, the guys that go in with infrared guns and kick open the doors and shoot dogs. And, you know, I'm a big law enforcement supporter and a big patriot. It's just outrageous that the drug war terrorizes Americans and arrests 800,000 of them for using a plant safer than alcohol that's been utilized by humans among the longest of any plant materials of any kind. So to me, it's an outrageous, it's a great country's worst policy since segregation, in my view. So the program, you kind of would call it dormant at this point. You're not having people coming in and buying 99 plants, getting the inspections, and just being part of the program. But the model still exists, and I hope it's something that's implemented. There's even a third stage. I told you about the centralized flower trimming facilities and centralized payroll and quality control, which would include testing for the cannabinoids, the components of the plants that have health values, as well as testing for things that you don't want in the plants, like molds and mildews, so consumers know what they're getting. Their third tier plan, which I really love, was to take the unusable stalks from the entire community's plants in this trimming center and basically cook it up in an ethanol and provide local energy.
So it would seem that $6 billion coming out of a county would buy a lot of legal representation to be able to take on the feds. Has there been any effort towards that?
That's a good question, because federal efforts are... they're kind of young, and Mendocino in many ways is an inward-looking county. Culturally, they call themselves – and that money has bought all the local representation, just so you know. Pretty much full support on the Board of Supervisors, and it's the farmer sheriff. Sheriff Tom is – he's a great law enforcer. He's everybody's sheriff. He's a county sheriff. It's the same thing in Oregon. Oregon has a terrific, terrific attorney, state attorney general right now that's basically put in office by cannabis activists, because the Democratic Party put up a former U.S. attorney. And that's the mistake that the feds are making all over, is being so out of touch with not only what's morally and constitutionally right, but with the popular pulse on what's happening with the drug war all over the country, everywhere I go. Kentucky's majority of Kentuckians want to end the drug war. Illinois is about to go medical. Vermont just decriminalized. Missouri's polling looking good for legalization in 2014 or 2016. What else? 40% of Colorado Republicans voted to legalize cannabis. Youth vote was up 12% in Colorado and 6% in Washington over. Then that's the holy grail, especially for Democrats, over 2008 Yes We Can election. So this was a rallying cry. It was something that drew people out. And so still these U.S. attorneys are coming in and really wasting taxpayers. It's not like they can be clueless about this, because they have a lot of choices to make. For instance, in the Northern District of California, Oakland is in an orgy of gun violence right now. And the local government is begging Melinda Haig's office to come in and start federal weapons kind of research, you know, investigations and prosecutions in the city. And instead they're going up to Mendocino County, arresting law-abiding, tax-paying, all-around good people doing good things for America. The argument being, oh, it's federal law, we have to enforce it. Well, you drove past about 50,000 undocumented workers in the grape fields to get there. That's a violation of federal law, too. Not that we should do anything about the people that allow us to have cheap food and wine, except pay them better. But still, this argument that the feds have to do what they're doing it's absolutely insane. So Oregon chucked that Democratic guy out in the primary and elected their woman, this terrific attorney general. So Mendocino County, all of, you know, their sheriff and the local government is great. But it's an inward-looking county. They call themselves the redneck hippies. They were the real back to the earthers that took it seriously after the Haight-Ashbury broke up, went and got cheap land up there and interbred with the traditional ranchers, fishers, loggers who came back from Vietnam, cannabis friendly, but with understanding of things like camouflage and defense perimeters. So, you see, you know, people bouncing around in ginormous monster trucks, but listening to Bob Marley. It's a really progressive county, which is why the sustainability guidelines are in there. Mendocino is the first county that by popular vote banned genetically modified organisms. If it were any more progressive, it would be clothing optional in the supermarket.
So you mentioned earlier that 100 people went into the zip tie program. Do you have a sense for 100 out of how many that didn't?
That's a great question. This was no question. This was a dipping of the toes in the water. It's very important that it raised the funds that Sheriff Allman predicted that it would, more than the funds, 20% more than the funds that he predicted. And it also garnered 20 farmers more than he thought it would get. He would need 80 farmers to get the 500. And he was right. He'd get 100,000 extra for the extra 20 farmers that came. The district attorney, by the way, in the county helped a lot. He would place a call after raids had been conducted on unauthorized, non-zip-tie program farmers, and tell them that he'd heard the good news. And this terrified farmer who just had his livelihood wrecked for the year and his, you know, kids laying down on the ground while guys with automatic weapons bashed open the door said, "Really? Good news? I could use some good news. What's the good news?" And Dave, the district attorney for Mendo, would say, "I heard that those 273 plants are going to turn into 99 seedlings tomorrow, clones, and that you're going to be at the sheriff's office writing an $8,500 check out to the county and joining the zip tie program instead of being indicted." And the farmer would say, "That is good news, Dave. Whew. Boy, did I need some good news. Thanks." And it was good news. And I think they got, I don't remember how many, 30-something farmers to join the program from that. The extreme left wing of Mendocino, which, you know, pretty big in a place that progressive, resented at first the sheriff's department sort of what they considered kind of a blackmail, like raid protection racket is how they saw it. And how dare, when the voters voted to allow medical cannabis use for any medical need, how dare the sheriff limit it to a certain number of plants? And, you know, technically, at core, they're right. If you're actually going to do raw juicing and some of the latest techniques for health maintenance from cannabis, you know, it's understandable to want to have a lot of plants. I can't imagine ever needing more than 99 plants. But the fact is, politics is the art of compromise. And this is a sheriff who decided he was going to defend the local industry and defend the local growers. And he stood by it, and he did it. So, yeah, hopefully the program will spring back up.
How much space, acreage, does 99 plants require?
Not very much. No, outdoor cannabis plants are the prima donnas of the cannabis world, practically of the plant kingdom. They're just loved plants. And I have some photos that are in the photo section of Too High to Fail that show sativa varieties of the plant, which are traditionally tropical plants that grow more big and tree-like, yielding 10 pounds of flowers right next to a 20-year-old apple tree. The same picture, a fairly mature apple tree. That's how big these sativas get. These bushy indicas, varieties of cannabis indica that come from more from the Hindu Kush region and thrived largely because they were, during Prohibition, they were easy to, and good to grow indoors, but they also have those kind of sleep aid, calming kind of effects on people. So that helps people that are in pain and really need to kind of, you know, that body relaxation thing, spasmacity, epilepsy type benefits, et cetera, that kind of stuff. Relaxation. Those plants can also yield up to 10 pounds outdoors, but they're big and bushy. So what I'm getting at is a lot of the more room, the better. But if space is an issue, you can do 99 plants on an acre or two. You know, being kind of an organic biodynamic guy, I love the idea of farmers using native soil, native nutrients, natural fertilizers, as opposed to grow boxes or indoor lights and all that jazz. But you, sheer real estate, you don't need a lot, but you are going to spend months and months tending and loving the plant. That's for sure. That's what I learned from these farmers.
So here in, as you already mentioned, here in Washington, they just passed a law allowing the people to grow marijuana here locally. And the state has had a conversation with the feds about you better back off and relax when it comes to Washington State and cannabis. Have you seen that type of discussion in other places?
I'm glad you asked that question because this is my first visit to Washington since the election. I live adjacent to Colorado, so I'm in Colorado often. And I spent the year researching California, and I know all the many of the good providers in New Mexico and New Mexico's medical program. So I've got a fairly – I would consider myself to have a fairly broad understanding of the climates in each state, although as a journalist, I'm the kind of guy who has to pound the pavement. And I have not yet met, for instance, with Colorado Governor Hickenlooper, who made his money from alcohol and strikes me and many as not getting it. But why I'm a little concerned about the Colorado program is its emphasis on industrial models and indoor cultivation. I'm thrilled about legalization in Colorado, and you still got a chance, Governor Hickenlooper, to redeem yourself and make me say nice things about you in media interviews. But from what I've heard, Washington is really doing it right. The guy that has been brought in to do the analysis seems to me to be the right choice. I'm forgetting his name right now. The decision last week to open the cannabis world to Washington world to cultivation, outdoor cultivation, is huge. The, like you say, the state level support of don't mess with us seems to be like we're doing. In other words, Colorado seems to be begrudgingly doing what it has to do, and if not mining the harbor the way that some drug warriors are doing, as they lose everywhere. You know, Arkansas, Florida, these places are going to legalize cannabis soon. That's what the people want. Dragging their feet and making sure that it's very much the Wall Street-friendly model where the planet, let alone the small farmer, doesn't even necessarily figure in. And I think that hopefully will change. But I think that in Washington, I'm really the most excited. This is the place I'm watching. And it's the hardest to go first. Oregon is going to have it so much easier. They're about to legalize for real, too, in 2014 or 2016. And they have it so much easier because you guys, for instance, you have a couple of flaws here in Washington, as many listeners will know. The very arbitrary THC limit that's in the initiative indicating intoxication. It's absurd. It's unscientific. It's unacceptable. I understand why the terrific folks that started this initiative put something like that in there. You know, they do polling. They're just smart, and many of them are former prosecutors, and they get that people are saying, or like the one thing their focus groups were saying was, well, you know, now is there going to be stone driving or something like that? It's a bunch of nonsense, and I'm talking about based on multiple studies that I've read. We're talking about a safer highway situation if people are substituting cannabis for alcohol. But I'm a father, and I want total sobriety, and what we need is new case-by-case field testing, not for cannabis, not for alcohol, but for everything, especially our nation's real epidemic, which is prescription pill addiction. I mean, you pop up legal prescribed OxyContin right now. God, I wouldn't want you driving on that road alongside me. So that arbitrary THC limit needs to come out of the Washington initiative. But for the most part, the Washington plan looks really great. I mean, I jumped up and down. I sent a letter off to I'm forgetting his name now, the Seattle city council member who's on the alcohol board who was behind that opening up of the Washington cultivation to outdoor farmers, a note just telling them, you know, that I was going to be in town and thank you, because this is the future of our children at stake here. If I could, one quick thing I wanted to mention about Mendocino County is not only was the strain that I followed into how to fail, it's called Cashmere Kush, not only did I follow it from the 10-month process from farm to patient. The farmer's name was Thomas Ballag, opened his names and financial records to me and still faced federal risk. Only wants to be as a taxpayer. His father was a Hungarian freedom fighter against the Soviets in 56 Budapest Rebellion and escaped to the U.S. and raised his kid to do what he believed was right. And Thomas believes that this is what was right. And so far, he's been great. He has to not only supply his own collective, but his friend Matt Cohen's who in the Zip Time program who got raided. So not only did I follow one of those plants that Thomas grew, but I spoke to the Gregor Mendel, the geneticist, the Barnside second-generation farmer who developed the strain. And it was fascinating to speak with him. For one thing, you got people splicing genes at Monsanto for entire careers that never make it into a product. And this guy is really a genius. He's good enough at what he does the old-fashioned way that he's got like 5 or 6 strains in wide rotation in the California medical cannabis community. And that's straight up. I wouldn't call it capitalism, but it's straight up survival of the fittest. I mean, that is what works. He's gave me story after story of strains that he developed that he thought were perfect, but that year the humidity was just this notch up where they disintegrated into powdery mildew and fell apart when they looked so good in his 1 or 2 years of test crops. So this Cashmere Kush, Rock was his name, the developer. His plan was explicitly for professionals. He's trying to erase the stigma from cannabis. For professionals like a pilot or a doctor, teacher, PTA member, politician, preacher, these type of people. Bus driver. People that doesn't want to see zonked on pharmaceuticals. He wanted to give them an indica, he said, that provided pain relief, let's say for a glaucoma or arthritis, war wound, whatever it is. But didn't, he said, give you the couch lock. Now, I'd never heard this term before, but I'd been to college, and what he's talking about is someone sitting for 15 minutes on the remote wondering where the remote is before realizing she's holding it, right? So, not sativas, for those who are experienced with the plant, but indicas. So he wanted indica effects without the couch lock, and when I visited a cancer patient and a rheumatoid arthritis patient, I should say, that was exactly how they described the effects of Cashmere Kush. So this was a Barnside organic geneticist just crossing strains until he got it right. So support your local cannabis industry.
All right. Well, unfortunately, with that, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Folks want to see more, they can follow me at Organic Cowboy at Twitter.
Been talking with Doug Fine, investigative journalist and author of the book Too High to Fail, Cannabis and the New Green Economic Revolution. And you can also follow his work via his website, dougfine.com.